I live in Strawberry Point, Iowa, and I've always been interested in the pre-Columbian civilizations, and when I got my last child through college, I decided I'd go see and find out about and study. And today we're going to be going to Teotihuacan. And I wish you'd take that chronology table and locate yourself in time there. There should be one on your, and if there isn't, maybe you can share. We are just about at the beginning of the first century A.D. here. Teotihuacan was at that time a village of about 6,000 people. And over time it grew and grew and grew and grew, and you can see it grew for a number of years there. And at the time that it began its decline in the year 600, it had grown to a population of upwards of 150,000. They projected between 150,000 and 200,000 people. We're in what is called the cultural era of classic. We're in the classic, the late formative and moving into the early classic years. And so we're about, some people put it back farther into the first 100 years B.C., 100 B.C., and others move the beginning of Teotihuacan's rise up to about the beginning of the Christian era. Now today we're going to be looking at some specifics on this city, and it might be nice to know how we know what we know about the city. Of course, much of what we know about it is because of what archaeologists have found out for us by examining the material remains that they find. And they find out from the art what people wore. They find out from the garbage dumps or middens what people ate and the utensils that they used. And they find out from the foundations of the buildings what the complexes were like, and what kind of buildings were there and what they built from. And they oftentimes find tools which tell them about the technology of the people. So we have many things that authenticate the information that is given out by archaeologists as they summarize the research that they've made. We want to talk a little bit about what we do know about these people and then what we don't know about them. Now there's a whole list of things that we know about these people simply from what archaeologists have told us. We do know about the size and the plan and the population of this ancient city. And we do know what influence they had in their area. We do know about the structures that they built. We know about their society. We know about their religion. We know about their decline and their fall. What we don't know is who the people were, what caused the decline of their city, and why the city was burned in the end. So as we talk about the various aspects of this first true empire and first true urban settlement in the New World, we need to think about clues for its decline and eventual destruction. So many times when you study ancient civilizations, it pops up in your mind, well, all of them rise and all of them fall. What is ahead for us? What did they do? What are we doing, you see, that will eventually lead to our fall or decline? So let's start with the things that we do know. And one of the first things that we know about the size and the plan of the city. Grew from 6,000 people as a village culture in about 150 AD, as it really began to move along, to a city of 150,000 to 200,000 people. An interesting thing about this city is that it was plotted out before any building was done. Now, I don't know whether you can see this very well, but this city, like many of the other Mesoamerican cities, is just a tad off square on north-south. Almost all of the ancient cities are built on the north-south axis. Almost all of them fall a little bit off north-south. This particular one, they say, is 15 degrees off true north-south. Now, why they did that, it must have something to do with their astronomical observations or some of their beliefs, but they all lie off like that. So we know we have a great city here that was planned before any building was done. And it was laid out in quadrants. The city planners laid the thing out, and down through the ages, the 500 years that it endured, they stuck to it. Everything is square. There are no wandering alleys at Teotihuacan. It's all 45-degree angles all the way around here. We have a city that has a very long avenue. Now, when you walk from here to here, which is down this broad avenue, you have walked a mile. And they find that in their latest observations that there is another mile down here that also was an extension of the avenue. So we know about the plan of the city. Yes.
Could they have been working on a magnetic north instead of...
I don't know. Would that do it?
That'd be close.
That could have been, couldn't it?
This is in Central America?
Well, this is in Mexico.
Mexico. It might have been. Mm-hmm. If they had a way of checking that.
Well, I was wondering the fact of the tilt.
Beg pardon?
I don't know what the tilt of the earth is, if it was in corresponding with the tilt.
I don't know, but it's interesting. Some of them are 17 degrees off, some of them are 15, but they never go more than that.
Mm. But they're off to the northeast and southwest?
Okay, here's due north. Mm-hmm. And they lie just that much to the south. They're on a north-south axis, but not straight.
That would north. Be close to it, right?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. But that's what that might be. But that's the plan that they followed, you know, and it was pretty true of many of the Mesoamerican cities. We know that this city covers 9 square miles. Another question?
I couldn't figure out whether the North Star was off that much or not.
No, it's not off that much. And with precession of equinoxes, some of the things in Egypt that go far enough off, like we're lined up to run Kuban, and Drago the Dragon was the pole star. But this doesn't go back quite as far. So if they were lining up with whatever there was a pole star in, it doesn't quite line up with that.
If you're there when the sun comes up, which I was one time, and you're standing right here, it comes right up over the middle, mm-hmm. the pyramid of the sun. It comes right up over it.
At equinox or?
No, it just seems to be, you see where you are, that it just seems to rise right up over there. And I'm trying to think when I was there. I was there always in August.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What's the origin of the name Teotihuacan?
Beg pardon?
What's the origin of the name? Where does the name come from?
Well, that's an interesting thing, because these people who lived here, and we don't know who they were, we don't know what they called their city. It was named by the Aztecs 700 years after the city declined and fell. And the Aztecs held this place in high reverence. They thought it was such an awesome city that it couldn't have been built by human beings. It had to have been built by giants. Giants, and they found the bones to prove it. And the conquistadores were so really excited about this also and awed by it, that they sent one of the bones back to Charles V. Of course, it was a, you know, mastodon bone is what it was. Mm-hmm. But they sent it back to him, and there's no record of what his response was, but it was sent back to Spain.
Mm-hmm.
But the Aztecs made pilgrimages to this place. They actually called it Teotihuacan because it means a place of the gods.
Can I make one response about when you're saying that you're in one place and you could look through from one place to another to see the sunrise or set? The Pueblo Indians in Casa Grande had holes in their walls, and it was through those when two holes lined up, that was their calendar.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure it has some astronomical significance. We better show you where you are, too. I'll make my usual beautiful map of Mexico here. And we'll just go around down here like that. We're right about here. We're 45 miles north and a little bit east of Mexico City. And you can, if you go out by train or by plane, you can see this huge structure, right? How many of you have been there? I thought we would have some people who have been there. It's an awesome sight to walk in here and have this all laid out before you. So have I answered your question about the name? The place of the gods, they called it.
How do we know that they laid the city out entirely before the first structure? Were there actually...
By dating of the things that they found.
We know that the city was pre-planned.
Mm-hmm. If it hadn't been pre-planned, it would have wandered. You see, as the city grew. It has many compounds out here. There are residential compounds out here and workshops out here. And palaces going up and down here, and temple mounds going up and down here. But all the foundations that they find are squared off. And by the dating of the things that they find, they can project that it was all planned out before it was, that is, it didn't just grow as some cities do, that it was a planned city. Any other things about the city itself? We'll get to the structures individually, yes.
Well, you said that they don't know what happened to the people. Isn't there, nobody can make a connection between the artwork or pottery, that type of thing that's found there, and that which is found at a later date?
There are projections, and we'll get to that at the very end because I'm going to have you all work on that. But they have no proof that, for instance, the Toltecs came down and wiped them out, or the Chichimecas came in from the north and wiped them out. The decline began 100 years before the city was burned. And the decline, they think, might have had something to do with trade, might have had something to do with depletion of resources. So there were a number of things that could have entered in there. But we do know those things about the city. We know about its plan. We also know about the influence of the people, the influence of the civilization. And I have a map for you here. And that will show you where you are in Mexico, too. And what you want to cue in on are all the little arrows going back and forth. Teotihuacan is not existing in the vacuum here. There are many other cities that are evolving from their village cultures into power structures. Now, is there enough light here so that you can see? Can you find Teotihuacan right in the center? If you have there's enough of these so that everyone can have one. Here. It's easier to look at than if everybody has one.
Anybody need one?
Do you want to have one?
Right in the center, you'll find Teotihuacan. You might check the key over here to the left. There's a little flat pyramid that identifies the major classic sites. And if you go down from Teotihuacan and a little bit to the right, you'll find a place named Monte Albán, which was also growing and evolving into a powerful place. The Zapotec Indians are down there doing great things. Every place you find one of those little flat pyramids, you have a major city. There is another one up there on the coast, Cerro de las Mesas. Do you see it? Up there on the coast. If you happen to have a pen, you might just circle those things, or a pencil, so that you can see them. Then over you find a kind of a darkened circle there, and I have trouble pronouncing that word. Xochicalco is what. You see it over there, begins with an X. Okay, now that's an evolving city. Then over on the Gulf Coast, you have Remojadas, which is evolving into a power. So you have Teotihuacan moving out there to all those places. You also see the arrows coming back. See the arrows going both directions? And notice that one of the arrows goes clear down here along the Gulf of Tehuantepec. So you have a city here that is a city of influence across its territory and others. Now, the interesting thing is that there were other cities that were political entities at the same time that Teotihuacan was, but somehow they managed to maintain their political integrity, probably by diplomatic maneuvers. They weren't as powerful as Teotihuacan, but they had diplomats. Also, there were trade agreements between them. One of the things I didn't tell you about the city was that it was truly a cosmopolitan city, because they had wards with different groups of people. Do you find Oaxaca down there by Monte Alban? Maybe they don't call it Oaxaca.
Yeah,
you find it? Well, in this city there was a Oaxaca ward, where the Oaxaca people, who were artisans, lived there. They practiced their own religion, their own customs. There was also a ward for the people of Veracruz, and they were obsidian workers. And they had another little place over in here. The Maya had a compound in Teotihuacan. And if you look down there, you'll see an arrow. Arrows coming up from those places toward Teotihuacan. In other words, there's an interchange there, not only of ideas, but of material things and of people, probably people teaching people. But there was a real interplay at that time. You need to remember, this was not a vacuum that this grew up in. It just happened to become the behemoth of the place, the controller of the area. And Teotihuacan's influence was felt all over the area. And wherever it went, there seemed to be an improvement in government and technology, and also in the communication of ideas. Now, the other thing I'd like to have you look for on that map are the obsidian mines. If you look over there in your on your key, you'll find, I think it's a little circle. Now, to find the obsidian mines, go to Teotihuacan and come down south and then take a right. Over there. Do you find one of them? That little circle down there? Mm-hmm. That was very important to this civilization. It was one of the bases of their economy, was the production of obsidian tools, knives, blades of all kinds.
How far would that be in mileage?
Beg pardon?
How far would that be in mileage?
Well, there is a scale of miles down below that you can see, but they give it in meters, of course. No, they give it in miles also. So just kind of take your finger and go over there. It would be about less than 100 miles. There's another obsidian source in here someplace. It's north of Teotihuacan at Pachuca.
Pachuca, yeah.
See it up there? That was a very important mineral. They also got onyx out of their mountains, and they got jade, but the theory is that they had to trade for that jade. They also worked in feathers, and of course they couldn't get feathers from their area, so trade was an integral part of their economy. And there were many farmers, too. The farmers were very important to the area.
May I add a geological comment? anybody has a question about obsidian? Everybody know what it is?
No, what is it?
It's a volcanic glass. When the lava chills very rapidly, they think it forms this glass. It has the same mineral as granite. You can see it in the lapidary. Sometimes it has little flakes in it, snow flakes. Sometimes it's brown. But what you see in the Teotihuacan area is like black glass.
And there's some that's very green too. They've got a green cast to it.
Yes, also, that more of a quartz. And it comes to a very sharp edge naturally when it's broken. And one way they can date is when this stuff ages, it forms a kind of a patina or a crust on it. And so if they find artifacts some distance, sometimes they can date them by the time it takes that kind of patina to form on the glass. Yeah. So we can tell how long ago it came from that particular source. It's been really an index for the trade and how long ago. Mm.
Thank you, Evelyn.
They just recently found some that they think came from north of Teotihuacan, that's not marked here, in the area of Puebla, where it says that area. I was just there last month, and they just made some new discoveries of some artifacts in that area.
Wonderful. Which place?
Well, it's east of Puebla. It's about 50 or 60 miles east of Puebla. And I don't think the exact name is there, but there's a site where they just found some stuff that indicated trade with that area.
Not Cholula.
No, it's way beyond Cholula.
No, it's farther south.
It's not named.
It's not on here, is it?
No, it's not on. It's an obscure sign, but and I don't remember the name. Someone knows at home. Mm-hmm. But they just found a new side of trade, I don't know.
So we know that these people were influential people. We should look at the structures that they have built here. When these represent roads that you could come in on. I remember when I first saw this place, I came in on this particular road and walked in here. And I think it came around here and walked through here. And it's all of a sudden here is this great dead city. And now how many of you have been there? What was your first impression of that city?
Well, this was about, 20 years ago? They didn't have the sound and light show, so it was coming into the most monstrous graveyard imaginable. And then we went up the Pyramid of the Sun. Mm-hmm. And I do enough history to, I see that red light probably indicate the blood, and do enough history to just kind of get that creepy feeling, well, what happened here before I got here?
I'm not sure why that is shown in red, although they did often paint their structures. Mm-hmm. So they may be telling us that it was once painted red. Mm-hmm. Some of the temples were once painted blue.
Well, the Diego Rivera murals, they seem to be constantly throwing the bodies down the steps so that the blood stained the stones. Mm-hmm. Now, it may be that he wanted it to be as horrible as possible, and that might not have been anthropologically true, but it was always blood in his running.
Okay, somebody else who's been there, what was your first impression of the city?
Well, just amazement.
Yeah.
And I think that there were some small temples that had very intricate work, and I was very amazed. It was kind of tile work, if I remember. Mm-hmm. I don't know this area or this.
Well, I think you're talking about this temple over here, which is Quetzalcoatl. It's the temple of the butterfly. Mm-hmm. And that had lots of unusual stonework in it.
Yeah.
We'll take a look at that, too. Anyone else has been there? Who else has been there?
Just big, I guess. I'm surprised how
big it was. Big and dead, right?
It spread out when you go down the main street. It was
yeah. I remember walking in there, and you're just kind of awed by it. And if you come in here, you look down that length of that thing. And of course, the overpowering structure that you see is the Pyramid of the Sun here. But the more artistic one is the Pyramid of the Moon. It has much more artistic planes on it, and it has a more artistic setting. This one is huge, and it's overpowering. But this one is quite artistic in the way it's put together.
Here's well, the snake heads there too, one of them.
Snake heads?
It's Quetzalcoatl.
Okay,
I'm sorry.
No, it's just the Quetzalcoatl.
Snake heads, big snake heads.
Yeah, that was that's down here. Probably. Now you're talking about, you have seen the big snake heads here?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They would have been down here, I'm sure, in the temple of Quetzalcoatl that's in the citadel. Now, for some reason or other, I couldn't find my slides of Teotihuacan. I just found a very few of them. But it's interesting to look at what is here. And Evelyn loaned me a couple that she had with her. You enter on this road, and you can come up here, and you're coming in between, in this area right here, and this massive pyramid is looming to one side, and your first impression is that it's just like a huge bump on the landscape. It's 210 feet tall, and it's 2 football fields on the side.
What's inside
of
it? Rooms inside of it?
No, it's rubble. It has a rubble core. But there's something else that's interesting about it. When we get farther down the Avenue of the Dead, I'll tell you about a finding that they made in 1971 in connection with this. But I remember stopping there beside my friend and just staring at that for a while and thinking, my goodness, it must have taken a long time to build it. Now, they started constructing this in about the first century after the birth of Christ. It was finished by 150 AD. And they think that it has 1,500,000 cubic yards of rubble and block in it. Hmm. Now we've walked into the pyramid of the plaza of the Pyramid of the Moon here. And there are around this little plaza, this would be like you could take this part of it and put it over on the other side, you'd have a kind of an arc here. And there are 9 temples that go around there, temple platforms. And the Pyramid of the Moon is right where I'm standing now. It appears to be as tall as the Pyramid of the Sun because of the rise in the land. And it has, as I said, more beautiful plains than that. That one does. And as you stand there, you can look out over the countryside on the top of it. In the center of this plaza of the Pyramid of the Moon, there is another platform. And from the location of that platform and the things that are around it, you can assume that that was a place, a ceremonial spot where ceremonies were performed in that spot, because the seating could be all around on the temple platforms and up the Pyramid of the Moon. The Avenue of the Dead was named by the Aztecs too. They call this long stretch here the Avenue of the Dead, and they buried people alongside it. And they made annual pilgrimages to this area 700 years after the thing was defunct. Really.
When they talk about the Avenue of the Dead, was it honoring?
No. The Aztecs buried people along here.
Right, because right now I'm studying the pre-Christian Celtics, and they had such a connection with the dead.
These people did too. Yes.
Okay.
There was a very pronounced belief on the part.
Connection with the other side, I guess, instead of saying it was dead.
Yeah.
Okay.
All the pre-Columbian people believed implicitly in an afterlife.
Okay.
They also believed in the controlling spirit. Now, their ideas of controlling spirits are
the Aztecs.
Montezuma, whose name wasn't really Moctezuma, we say that because that's the way the conquistadores pronounced it. But there is an H and a K in there. Moctezuma was his name. He made an annual pilgrimage on foot to this spot. And was still doing it, I presume, at the time that the Spaniards invaded the continent. So it was a holy place to them, a place of pilgrimage. And of course, the Avenue of the Dead begins right here. If you've hoofed it all the way down, you know that it is, and if it's in the summertime, it's very hot. It's a hot walk. And there are cross sections in it. You can see, little red things going across here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, what those are, they seem almost like dikes. And you have to go up them and over them and down them. Do you people have been there? Do you remember that? You didn't go straight down the avenue. You did a lot of up and downing on the way. Remember that? Well, we'll go down the line a little bit here.
Can they speculate what those dikes were or anything like that?
Can't hear you.
So can you speculate what those dikes were, or are you coming?
Well, they were helpful to walk over to get from one side to the other. You see, because the Avenue of the Dead, it's built up all alongside here. There are palaces and temples up here, built up. So the Avenue of the Dead appears to be down low in many places. And so to get from one side to the other, that's a helpful cross area. I think you'll be able to see that as we get down the line a little bit. Here you can see these structures a little bit more clearly. You can also see the terrain.
Were there things on top of those?
On top of these?
Yeah.
There isn't any semblance of anything there. There may have been something that was perishable on top of them. But they have found remains of temples on top of both the Pyramid of the Moon and the Pyramid of the Sun. There have been remains found there, but they were perishable material.
Well, they also built one on top of the other in some places.
Right.
Yeah.
They superimposed things, and this was true in the Citadel, and we'll show you that when we get there. We're just hoofing it along now down the Avenue of the Dead.
I'm sorry, but I'm finally getting the concept that this, when you're talking about the temples along the side there, these are the temples along the side, they were just flat structures, they weren't buildings?
Well, there's nothing left. What you see as you walk down here are foundations.
Okay, so these are foundations then,
mm-hmm.
what we're looking at?
Not this. These are have been reconstructed from the remains.
Ah.
See?
What are they? Yeah.
They're temple platforms is what they're called, temple platforms. I presume they were used for, you could seat a lot of people coming up here. You could put on displays of things going on up there. Do you know, Evelyn, have you ever read anything about what?
No, I have, but I don't recall either. They're not real sure what all happened there. They call them platforms.
They just call them platforms.
They don't have that much here, so these people could be outdoors much of the time, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, this one, they're definitely have found things there that make them believe that those were used for actual ritual purposes. Whether these were also, we don't know. This is taken from the top of the Pyramid of the Moon. And Evelyn, you want to tell them a little bit about
this? Well, the point is that if you would follow along and dig around there, there's more there. It's just
yes.
An excavator, and you can see part of the squared off plan. It looks like a field, but there are traces going all the way out there. And this may be where some of the ordinary folks live, because the ceremonial center would have been, you know, for the nobility and the priests and so on more, and around this would have been where the peasants lived.
This is part of the 9 square miles, you know, that is not involved in... See, this is not 9 square miles here. It's the sprawl of the city. Out of my, and if you, yes, as you walk out here, you can see that these squared off places were something other than the fields that you see there now. Now this is the front of the Pyramid of the Sun. This particular platform was built by the Aztecs. This was a place that they reverenced. And you can, you go up in stages and you get up to the top and you can see forever from the top because it's very tall. In 1971, quite by accident, they found that there is a tunnel that goes directly in from the west side, and it's an old lava tube, what it is, and it goes to the center of the pyramid, and there it's enlarged into kind of a clover leaf, and they have found that it predates the pyramid. It's older than the pyramid. So it's probably the reason that the pyramid was built exactly where it is, and probably the reason that the city was built exactly where it is. And it was used as a cult center even after the decline of the city. But eventually it was looted and so it was shored up. There's a theory that the Aztecs knew about it, about that tunnel into the center. But it had significance, you see, insofar as the setting was concerned. Anybody climb the top? Did you all climb to the top?
Yes. It's really steep, yeah.
A little steeper than the sun.
You could have used an architect or an engineer to design your steps.
Yes,
if you lean back a little bit, you fall all the way to the bottom.
But the steepest part was the part way at the top. Mm-hmm. These seem to be... So, you climb up some of the others, and these don't seem so steep. This part was steep, and that part was steep. But... anyone else? Yes.
Well, just a question. How does it compare to the Great Pyramids in Egypt in size? Do you happen to know?
I think I have in a book where it shows the relative size of them. It's lower.
I know that's made out of 2.5 million blocks.
See, it's bigger.
2 to 3 tons each. Mm-hmm. And I've climbed to the top of it. I think it's steeper. Much steeper.
But the pyramid at Cholula is taller than this. I mean, the one that looks like a hill with the church on top. Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's taller. Now, I think it's in the book Mexico by William Coe there that it shows, or it could be in Hunter's book there, where it shows the one plotted over another so you can see the relative size of it. But it's a good-sized mass. Everybody who makes it to the top feels really proud of themselves. Now we're walking on by it and going south, and you can see some of the structures around there. And here we have that kind of wall area that closes off one section from the other. You're looking toward the Pyramid of the Moon, way, way down there. And eventually, and I'm going to ask you to turn the light on for a minute and so I can draw
There's
a little diagram.
There's the snake heads I was talking about.
Beg pardon?
There's the snake heads I was talking about.
Yeah, well, we'll come back and we'll take a good look at those snake heads. But you're clear down here now, and you're about to go into this place called the Citadel. The interesting thing about that place is, for me anyway,
I have one thing before the Citadel.
Sure.
Is there something on top of the mountain behind the moon there?
Well, there must be, but I don't know what it is. Do you have one?
I don't remember either.
Maybe it's a rocket taking off.
I don't recall it. It was just there last month.
It looks like a structure of some kind, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I don't even remember seeing that.
Yeah.
Maybe you're so awed by the other things that you see that that doesn't soak in. I don't know.
Which direction is this looking down toward the moon from the temple of the moon from Mexico City?
Beg pardon?
Which direction? North or south?
Northeast.
Oh, you're northeast.
Here's Mexico City. Big square. You can get on the bus, and it's a lot of fun to ride on the bus. Once in a while, you get a bus that says, no pigs on this bus. It's a lot of fun to ride the bus. You'd be right about up here.
I see. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're going to go to the Citadel here. And it's a big area compound, like so. And it has wide little, what would you call those, platforms all the way around it. And where you see these little things going around here, there are small temple platforms going around here. I can't remember how many there are to the side, but I think there are four here. I can't remember how many over here, but there are 15 altogether. Two here. There are lots of theories about this place, that it was an administrative place, that it was the home of the elite ruler. But when you go in, there's a thing right here, and then you get over here, and here is that temple that has the marvelous facade. And when I was there in 1983, they were digging up over here. And when I went 2 years later, they were digging things up over here. And they had found some things over there that were not open to the public yet. And I don't know what they found. When were you people there?
I was there in 82.
82. Anybody there just of late?
Last month.
When?
August. This year.
This year?
Yeah, I was there this year and last year and the year before.
Okay, have they, so do they have anything?
They are digging more to the south of that, to this side. Of
down
that.
Here?
Yeah, there's some sheds and some shelters there of excavation there, particularly, but I don't know what they found there.
Let's look
they
at.
Are digging, who's digging actually?
Beg pardon?
When you say they are digging, who's digging? Who are they?
Well, they all of the excavations are now under the control of the Mexican government. They don't invite people in anymore to do digging because they take so many things home with them.
Oh yeah.
You see, so many of the Mexican artifacts are in New York and Boston and wherever, and so it's very strictly controlled now. I had an opportunity to go to Sahel this summer to do some surface work on one of the Maya sites there. And that was the first time they had allowed an American group to come in a long time. It was going to be strictly supervised. Mm-hmm. So, and you can't really blame them, you see. They've been victimized a great deal. Okay, let's look at that temple of Quetzalcoatl. Now, there is a better photo of this, but you need to take a look here because you stop here and look at it, and then you go on around the corner, and this is what you see. And that's what you were referring to, I'm sure.
Yes, that's what I mean.
This is a Tlaloc figure. This is their god of rain. And over here you have the feathered serpent. There are different constructions put on the symbolism of the feathered serpent. One is that he is the patron saint of art and literature and learning. And another is that he stands for immortality because the snake loses its skin and regenerates. Does anybody else have another interpretation of the feathered serpent? It's interesting to note that they have shells here. Now you can see we have an inland city,
So this is certainly evidence of the fact that they were involved with trade with people who were on the coast.
Wasn't there some connection between Cortez and his plumed helmet wasn't there some connection between Cortez and his plumed helmet and the assumption that he might be Quetzalcoatl reincarnated or something?
The good old Quetzalcoatl was really somebody named Topiltzin, who was a Toltec, and the Toltecs got in a big fuss with one another. And the one drove the other one off. And Topiltzin had taken the name Quetzalcoatl as just a second name for himself, because he was a very valiant and important and powerful person. So when he was driven off, he said he would be back. And so that's where the myth and legend came, that Quetzalcoatl was coming back. It was Topiltzin, the Toltec, who had taken the name, and he was calling himself Topiltzin Quetzalcoatl. So I don't know whether that would have something here or not, but this predates that story, you see, a bit. This is a very old temple. It's one of the oldest structures on the in the whole city. It goes back to 100 AD. So it's a very old structure. And the reason that it looks so good is that when they started their excavations, there was a four-tiered pyramid that had been built on top of it. So it protected it just like a shell. So the mosaic pieces that are on there are very well preserved. Anybody add anything about this who has been there?
Yes.
I haven't been there, but it's kind of amazing to me that the civilization 2,000 years ago seems to be better than what you got today.
Isn't that a fact? They really built them to last, didn't they? Yeah, sometimes I worry about what they're going to find in our middens when we get excavated.
Disposable
diapers. Anybody else who has been there that has anything to add about this particular structure?
I think the original color in some cases shows through. I mean, I think that other slide will show that better, but there's some original color.
That was blue.
Yeah. Yeah. There's some other colors too that's
been. It seems to me to be a little gaudy being blue. I liked it the way it was, but they have found original color. Shall we back up? You think we can see a little blue? No?
What is the red and pink? There was some original color in that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's some of the original color, and on the other side there's more.
The color. Sometimes you have to watch out for that too. It could just be oxidation in the. But this is supposed to be original color there.
How is that put together? Is that cemented in, or is that just loose stone? Or?
Well, they had an interesting adhesive material that they made from limestone that they ground up. Mm-hmm. Now, you have to remember, we're still using Neolithic tools, too. Metal is still not being used for tools. There are no beasts of burden still, just people as the beasts of burden. But they made that limestone a kind of an adhesive.
And it is cemented together, though.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you'll find in these ancient structures that the stones are cut so that they fit so well that they don't need anything. But here you can see there has been it has been put together with a compound that has adhesive qualities. Now we're going to stop here for a minute and go into the compound. So if you'll turn the light off for me, would you turn the machine off? Yeah.
And the Aztecs built a pyramid over top of that?
No. The people of Teotihuacan had built that temple over the top of it.
Who? I'm sorry, I didn't get that.
The people who built this.
Uh-huh.
It was very common for them to
build their own second.
Yeah, over the top. And there were two different times that they did it, at 52-year intervals.
they sometimes did things like this, built a new pyramid over the top of another one. Also, at the beginning of a new regime, sometimes they built on top of another pyramid. Mm-hmm. And in Maya country, and getting farther down, you find that very often. Sometimes there'll be seven of them built on top of another one. And in Mexico City, if you have seen the ancient city that has been excavated there, you can see the different superimpositions as you walk along this walk. So it was commonly done.
Well, how does the archaeologist decide which is the most worth preserving? Maybe there's something better underneath.
Well, the thing that's underneath is always the oldest.
Yeah, so they go for the oldest?
Yeah, so they built. If you get clear down to the bottom, why you got, and there's nothing under there, and they tunnel in. I worked in a tunnel in Copan, and we were going, that's down in western Honduras, and we were taking materials out. And I don't know whether you take National Geographic or not, but it was in October of 1989 that they showed what had been found in that tunnel, and it was found after I went home. But we could see, you can walk right by the superimposition there, and you can see that here was another temple built on top of another temple. And there's one in Mexico City called Tenayuca that has nine superimpositions on it, where they just built on the top of the other.
Why are they called Temple of the Moon and Temple of the Sun?
That's an old myth. And archaeologists say, and historians and ethno-historians say they have no reason to dispute it, that it was a myth. That there's a wonderful book called The Myths of, what is the title? I think I've got it on a bibliography. Mythology of Central America, Mexico and Central America, that takes you back through those old myths and legends. But they say that the myth, the oral tradition of the myth is so strong that there's no reason to dispute the fact that the one was dedicated to the sun and the other one to the moon. Now, excuse me.
Is it Aztec myth?
No, a Nahuatl myth, going way, way back. It's in the Aztec language, which is Nahuatl. But it came from an oral tradition and then was written down in the language of the time when it was written down. And there is a very interesting old Nahuatl poem that says, and all things point to the fact that they're talking about the Olmec. They say, a long time ago, at a time no one remembers, there was a great civilization long, long ago. And that's just an old oral tradition poem that came down and then was eventually written in the Nahuatl language. Anything else before we go in and have a bite to eat in the great compound over here? This was a market area. A great market area during the time that this was a functioning city. And now you can go in there and there's the place to eat there. And there's a museum and there are obsidian workshops and pottery workshops and textile workshops. And you can go in and prowl around and you can buy a bit of obsidian that is carved. And then go upstairs and have a bite to eat. How many of you ate there? You didn't eat there? Weren't your feet tired by then? You just turned.
The bus was waiting.
The bus was. Oh, you went on a bus. That's a bad way.
Yes.
You have to go and stay the day, you know. I always thought that maybe it'd be fun if I just got lost in one of those places like the Temple of the Butterfly and then I could stay all night.
Because it rained and we had to really run. It was downpour.
Yeah.
And the museum is closed now. They're completely remodeling it.
Oh, how sad.
Well, I mean,
it'll be nice, but isn't that the story of your life? You arrive someplace and you plan to go to the museum and it's under construction. They're doing something with it.
Well,
anyway, after you eat, you can go outside and there are places to sit down here. And I don't know how it was for you if you just went right back because the bus was waiting. You mean it was waiting for you down here?
Yeah.
No, it was, I can't remember, but the driver said, usted tiene dos horas, and then the 2 hours were up, so.
Well, that's terrible.
Yeah, this was 20 years ago.
No, but anyway, you see a lot of people out there and they have their shoes off.
Mm.
And you know why they have their shoes off. And they're sitting there looking, most of them, just looking up the avenue. Now, what I'd like you to do is get some little groups here, and it will only take just about 2-3 minutes. And you, I remember sitting there and wondering what kind of social organization it would take to make that thing work. What would have to be present in order to make a city like that function? Now, they think it was a theocracy, that the top honcho was from the priesthood, was a variety of priests. What kind of organizational skills would you have to have? Why don't you talk it over there and see what you come up with?
You know, we have dinner at performance.
Oh, my heavens. We can't do it then. We haven't even got to the religion. Thank you for reminding me. Well, we got to talk about the religion. All right. One thing that they do know from the things that they've... Oh, we've got to look at the Palace of the Butterfly. We've only got 5 minutes.
3 minutes.
3 minutes?
I bet we can be late and still get fed.
I'm sorry. Well, you remember where it was? It's over here. It's right here. It's a fantastic place. It has these little creatures in here, and they have obsidian eyes. And some of them look like owls, and they look like fantastic little beings. And when you go down past these pillars, there are these square pillars. How many of you went into that wonderful spot? Yeah.
Are those supposed to be like human eyes around the bottom at the top? Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. Egyptian when I see them.
Well, very often you look at these things and you think, boy, that looks Egyptian. Same way when you look at their glyphs.
It's an eye to an eye no matter where you go.
Yeah. Okay, well, you go in here and there are all kinds of other wonderful things inside. One of the wonderful things inside is a mural. And this is supposed, it's called the Mural of the Jaguar, isn't it, Evelyn?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The Mural of the Jaguar.
That's supposed to be pretty close to first century. They mm-hmm. discovered that more recently. That they think that was done al fresco. Mm-hmm. In other words, painted on the fresh kind of plaster. Mm-hmm.
But it's a fabulous palace. Now, if I could have a little light, I do want to tell you that all the gods that were in the Mexican pantheon at the time that the Aztecs were a flourishing civilization for a short time, you want to be sure and look on that time thing and see what a short time that they really flourished. All of them were present in this civilization. They were all there already. The god of rain, the god of the sun, the god of the moon, Chipi Toltec, the god of he was really the god who took the skin of other things and was a god of agriculture and renewal. So they were all there in the pantheon of the people of Teotihuacan. And I do want to read you this Nahuatl myth. And they called it Teotihuacan, because it was the place where the lords were buried. Thus they said, when we die, truly we die not, because we will live, we will rise, we will continue living, we will awaken. This will make us happy. Thus the dead one was directed when he died. Awaken, already the sky is rosy, already sing the flame-colored wands, the fire-colored swallows, already the butterflies fly. Thus the old one said, that who has died has become a god, they said. He has been made a god there, meaning he has died. Thank you for coming. I'm sorry that we almost ran over.
Take your map, I don't need that map. No, keep your map, that's kind of fun, that map.
So what was your theory of political organization after all?
Oh, you mean why they...
What would it require to keep that whole thing going?
Well, they had to have a very stratified society in order to keep it going. I wish we'd had time to speculate on what happened, because there are many theories about why they think that maybe the obsidian mines might have given out. Mm-hmm. There was a disruption in the trade routes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That may have caused the decline of the city.
Mm-hmm.